Hey everyone, Buggy here, and this is not a new episode of Third Seat by the Window. I don't think I'm even going to count it as one of the Third Seat specials. It's just its own thing that I am dropping in the Third Seat by the Window feed because I don't have anywhere else to put it. Basically, this is just a review of the Netflix live-action Death Note movie that I did with my best friend. With apologies to Chris, I'm talking about my other best friend. Basically, he came over and we watched the movie together and recorded our thoughts on it. So here they are. I hope you enjoy them. Hello, everyone, and welcome to, I'm not entirely sure what this is exactly, sort of a bonus episode. I guess maybe I'll release it under the Third Seat feed.
Bonus round.
I am Buggy, your host, the postmodern weeaboo, and joining me today is... Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Long-time friend. God, it has been a long time. I am Jonathan.
Yep. Normally, Chris records these with me, but now you get my other best friend, Jonathan, who is recording with me in person, something we don't normally do. Woo-hoo. And the two of us have just watched the Netflix live-action adaptation of Death Note.
Yes, we did.
All right, so Jonathan, what exactly is our experience with Death Note together, since we... sort of share an experience with Death Note?
So Death Note was definitely my introduction to Japanese anime. Besides,
mine as well.
Besides the random Saturday morning cartoons that made it across the pond.
Yeah, pretty much exactly the same for me. I did watch Death Note before Jonathan, and then I... was the one who introduced him to it.
So he has a Death Note BJ and a Death Note AJ. That's before Jonathan and after Jonathan for those watching at home.
All right, Death Note BJ. We've obviously earned the explicit rating on this one already.
My bad.
Yeah, we're fans of the anime. I have also read the manga. It's actually sitting right up on my bookshelf over there.
Oh yeah, there it is.
Yeah. Have the complete set, and let's see here. We watched the Japanese live action movies as well.
Yeah, so I've actually seen the anime once or twice. Like I said previously, the first time with you, and then we've also seen the three Japanese live action movies.
Technically, there's four now.
I did not know about that, but I didn't know until recently. The Korean live action TV show adaptation.
Was that Korean? I think that was a J drama and not a K drama. What?
Okay, I apologize. There's no intention of offending there, but it was quite a good adaptation in my opinion.
I haven't actually seen that one, so I'm flying blind on that.
Okay.
So yeah, we figured, hey, why not come over, just hang out together and watch the Netflix movie together. We had us some alcohol, so we are a little bit tipsy as we're recording this.
Social lubrication.
Yeah, we're relatively sober though, wouldn't you say?
I would say so, yeah. Yes.
And we've had some potato chips. We did take some potato chips and eat them.
We did. This is something we did. Also, we offered up some apples.
Yep.
Had some apples. Yeah.
So,
and I was thinking about writing... Never mind, I won't get political.
As we are recording this in 2017, you can just imagine where that sentence was going and whose name Jonathan was thinking of writing in the Death Note, which is presumably the direction that sentence was going.
It definitely was, yes.
So, yeah, I guess let's just get into our thoughts on the film. Jonathan, what did you think of Death Note 2017?
So, I kind of put off any expectations. When I first heard of the fact that they were going to westernize and modernize the show, I kind of was skeptical. I didn't necessarily thought it needed to be done. But that being said, it was not bad.
It was bad,
but it wasn't terrible. Like, I wouldn't say, let's say maybe solid B to C movie cut. Yeah. It had its enjoyable moments, and then it had its parts where it kind of... So the cinematography was really interesting for me. The actual way that they moved around the video camera, it felt like they were trying to maintain an anime vibe, and it just constantly, it felt over, like, hyper-realistic, and it was really weird, but interesting. I would say it was only minorly distracting.
Yeah, personally, that didn't really stand out to me, probably because I watch almost entirely anime these days. I've never watched a lot of movies. I don't know a whole lot about cinematography, to be completely honest. That's not where exactly my focuses lie from a critical perspective. So that wasn't something that really stood out to me. It felt kind of like I think it was the frame rate maybe that was, which could be the TV rather than the movie. Because if it's like a 60 FPS TV, like it
it's true. Could have been the technology.
It looked like soap opera visuals to me, which I've seen like TVs that play pretty much everything like that.
And okay.
It's weird to me just because I'm not used to having nice big TVs like that.
Fair enough. Well, cinematography aside, I would say my opinions are overall positive. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I would actually say the same. I think that, like, I don't think that it's a good movie. That's the thing. Like, but I do think it is a very enjoyable movie. It's fun to rip off. I think that it is, like, perfectly camp. Death Note was the sort of camp that, like, it took itself really seriously. But honestly, it was kind of silly in a lot of ways. This one was more actively... silly at times.
Yes. Definitely. And I mean, plus it takes, God, how many seasons was Death Note? Was it just one season? But it was
that's
like,
that's a really weird question.
Hours of episodes?
I think it was like 36, 37 episodes long, which is a really abnormal thing. Normally anime is divided into, cores, which is 12 or 13 episode chunks, you know, roughly 4 months worth.
Sure.
And sometimes, you know, 12 episodes is considered a season. Sometimes 24 episodes is considered a season. Death Note ran for 3 cores, which is... It's just a really unusual length for anime to run in general. I think the only one off the top of my head that I can think of that has that same runtime is JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 4.
Okay.
Which... means nothing to you yet, but
we'll get there. My point was that they took a lot of content and crammed it into an hour and a half-ish, I'm assuming that was going to be. So obviously there were some parts that got cut, and like I said, we have seen several adaptations of this, so my memory on some of them is blending together. Like, I'm wanting to say I would have loved to see Donka Bob's and that crazy carnival mask that Elle wears. But...
Yeah, I think we're kind of in the minority as we both enjoyed the live action.
Oh, there were...
The Japanese live
if
action.
If you have not seen them yet and you have the opportunity to do so, dedicate 5 hours of your life to going out and seeing the 4 now live action Japanese Death Note movies.
Or even just the first two, because the first two are basically a retelling of the original anime series with some changes. And personally, like, I think that if you're going to compress a series, then the way that those first two Japanese live action adaptations did it were sort of the perfect way to do that. They combined a couple arcs that dragged long, because that's Death Note's biggest problem. It has a lot of parts that drag between the big drops, and the big drops are what makes Death Note amazing, I think. Like, the drops in Death Note are amazing, but the rest of it, like, that's kind of where...
Like, the filler episodes that still somehow add something to the story. But yes,
so, like, they were able to cut a lot of that out. Like, they cut most of the third core and combined the important parts with what's the name of that company? The corporate arc, the exactly as planned one.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I'd say, you know, definitely those were good at compressing it. But I think that if you aren't doing that, you've just got to make it its own thing, which this movie did.
Let's
go into sort of the different directions it went, starting with the characters and the names. They completely westernized it. Like, they set it in Seattle rather than Japan.
Although I still have yet to meet... I've been living in America for 26 years. I still have yet to meet a kid named Light. But they kept that one. They did westernize his last name to Turner, which I'm mad about.
They said, your mother was kind of a hippie. There was that line in the film. Maybe that's why his name is Light.
His
mom named... Oh, wow.
Okay. Fair enough.
It was just an offhand line.
I would have liked to see can't imagine life without Light. Yes, that would be dark. I would have loved to see that because it translates so well.
I think that was just a dub line, though.
Anyway, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Turner is a family name for me, so that kind of threw me out of the realm of suspension of disbelief a few times until I got used to it. I want to say they changed Misa to Mia.
Yeah, Mia Sutton. Like, Mia is... Well, the thing is, I'm really glad that they changed the names and whatnot, because the characters are completely different.
They are.
The characterization is hugely different.
Yes. Light has much less of an ego.
Yeah. So I think the big thing is, like, in the anime, in the manga... the source material, Light is essentially, you know, this genius egomaniac who right from the start is like, I'm going to become god of this new world. Whereas, you know, the Light in the 2017 film is basically this, you know, kind of... I mean, he's kind of sort of a goth emo type kid.
I don't know what you'd call him. Yeah.
He starts off with good intentions and... You know, he kind of is like, well, these people need guidance. Let's give them a little bit. And he has sort of these, you know, megalomaniac ideas going on at the beginning. But he realizes pretty quickly that he's in over his head. And, like, I think one of the biggest changes is to Light and how, you know, he kind of wants out after a certain point.
Yeah, to the point of almost going to L for help.
Yeah.
Not that that did him much good.
No. And I think the other, like, really big change is, you know, Misa Amane to Mia Turner, because Mia is...
Her name wasn't Turner, though. But
not Turner. Sutton. Mia Sutton.
Okay.
Her character was drastically different. Like, she's almost the antagonist. She's the one kind of pushing Light, like... In the series, Light's the one who's kind of controlling Misa. He's got, like, complete control over her. Whereas here, Mia is the one who sort of is controlling Light in a lot of ways. She's pushing him. You know, you get that line. He's like, "Do you think I'm crazy?" And she says, "I think you're not crazy enough."
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then especially then at the very end, the way things turn out for her. But I would go out on a limb and say she is definitely the antagonist. She is kind of the reason things start going downhill for for Light as Kira, because she, if she hadn't taken that note and killed off all the FBI investigators, who's to say that he wouldn't have been able to figure that out? Were you not supposed to be doing spoilers?
Oh, we're I'll put a spoiler warning at the beginning. Like, okay. we're gonna go into major spoilers and cut it in this, but yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, basically, like,
oh, by the way, guys, Light is Kira.
I fucking hate you. Jesus
dies. Sorry.
There's that. I think that's like the hugest difference between, you know, the series and the live action movie here is sort of those two's personality, because they're driving the whole thing. Whereas in the series, it's, you know, this mastermind who has this definite, you know, 5-step plan to take over the world and become god of it. Here, it's kind of these bitchy, kids. Whiny kids who,
yeah,
you know, end get up stumbling into something power. bigger than them, get in over their head and kind of don't know what to do about it. It's, you know, it's kind of, I get a little bit of a, you know, a Suicide Squad vibe from it.
Yeah.
Kind of in,
yep,
in how it's, like, it's in their personalities, yeah, and whatnot.
Yeah, and then there were also at times where, like, Light, for example, would emote wild, like one of the scenes where he and his father are talking. It seems like a switch just flips inside a Light, and he's just instantly angry, and then they fight. And I'm like, that's not how fights work in normal family dynamics. You get led up to a point, and then you boil over. You don't just flash boil.
Yeah, it's like, so there were, they're not so much, you know, calculating masterminds as, I mean, you know, Light is still smart here, but he's not a super genius mastermind. He's, you know, a smart kid who's also a hormonal, you know, he's a hormonal,
yeah,
teenager.
Yeah.
And is also underage too, and it, well, Light originally was in the series as well. I think, mm-hmm, he was 17, but yeah, he is there's some dialogue that shows that he's definitely
underage,
younger than 18,
yep,
at one point.
Doesn't stop him getting black eye.
Yeah. Then Ryuk was pretty different as well in his dynamic with them. He was,
yes, he was by and large motivating factor of at first instruction on how to use the book, and then later motivation by way of fear of, if you don't continue to do what I want, I'll basically take the book away from you. Whereas Ryuk in the original series was much more neutral.
Oh yeah, like he was basically just, hey, I'm just here for the ride. Yeah. I'm watching.
Humans
I'm
are
not
so
going
interesting
to interfere at all, except to give you some information that might be useful and might make things more interesting for me.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, at the end of Death Note, which I'm assuming that, you know, everyone who's listening to this has seen, you know, Light dies because Ryu kills him. It's, you know, it's basically, well, you know, this isn't fun anymore. You've been caught. Now I'm, you know, I'm going to take my ball and leave. Whereas, you know, this Ryuk, in there, Ryuk held all the power, but he was being neutral about it. He was just sitting there and observing. Here, it's more like Ryuk is subservient to Light, but trying to fight his way out from beneath that.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, he, it seems like, you know, he is bound to the Death Note, basically, rather than the Death Note being bound to him.
Sure.
He's, like, you see him at the end, you know, he's the one sort of controlling things. There's the line, he's like, you said dealer's choice, implying,
yep,
that he's the one who chose
how
exactly
watery,
things work.
Yes.
Speaking of, like, the rules of the Death Note are,
oh my
are
god,
different.
There are a lot of them.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of
house
rules in the original Death Note, but, like, the rules here are different.
Yeah,
like,
there wasn't a burning rule, if I remember correctly. There wasn't anything like that.
Yeah, no, there
you
was.
Basically, once someone's name was written in the book, you couldn't undo it.
Yeah, in like the conception, like in the conception, the sort of pilot chapter for Death Note, there was a death eraser that could erase names from the notebook and bring them back to life, but that was never, you know, used in the series proper.
Oh,
here, there's a rule where in the Netflix film, there's a rule where you can essentially burn a page of the Death Note, and you know, the person whose name is written on that, it will, if it hasn't already taken effect, it will basically stop that from happening.
Which,
but you can only do that once.
Only do that once. Which then, that begs the question: like, you see them write, you see the previous owner's pages of names, and it's just cramped, tiny, no white space left on the page, just name after name after name after name. And then in the anime, as well as in this, you see on at least two occasions, just one name per page. Not only is that a colossal waste of paper, I mean, we probably won't get into the technical theory on how the book works here, but
in the anime, there are unlimited pages, and also, like, Light does, at, you know, most points, right, fairly neat and, you know, line the pages with names.
Yeah.
But
in the cases of pages going missing and pages getting torn out or cut out or shared around, which is another thing that they changed, Light is the only one that can see Ryuk.
Yes, only the owner of the Death Note can see Ryuk, and it takes, I think, 7 days for you to lose ownership of the note, at which point Ryuk finds a new owner for it, implying that there is always a Death Note in the world for some reason or another. Like, it's the lore behind it is really different.
They actually, now that I think about it, they kind of really set themselves up for a sequel that would then build its own canon.
Potentially, yeah.
That'd be crazy.
It's really weird. There's a lot of weird changes, and I have no problem with that as an idea.
Yeah.
Like, this thing wasn't trying to remain faithful to the original at all. It had some plot points that were kind of similar in some ways, but not a lot of them.
And there were a few shots as well that were, at least to me, obviously trying to invoke images of the anime.
Yeah. I mean, it's similar in some ways, but it's very definitely trying to be its own thing, which I think, if we've learned anything from the Ghost in the Shell debacle that happened recently, is probably the best way to go. I have not seen it. Everything I've heard, though, has said that it's kind of tried to do its own thing while still remaining true to the source material, and that made it come across as worse. There was, like, a whole lot of controversy over, you know, whitewashing and whatnot.
Yes.
And, I mean, here, like, you know, you can say it's whitewashing, but, like, they went full throttle with it. You know, they're like, well, we're going to completely, you know, redo the cast.
Yeah.
They tried to at least have a diverse cast to some extent.
Well, I mean, yeah, Elle is
still Asian.
Elle is black, which I kind of liked. That being said, having gone to high school in Spokane, Washington, which is about 6 hours away from Seattle, Washington, little bit of a difference. Well, I mean, it really depends on how fast you're going, but sure. Yes, generally. There would have been a lot more diversity in the background and just the non-important characters, so that really is just kind of me being anal.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, they've got, you know, the original series, the manga, the, you know, live action series, the live action movies, that's all, you know, set in Japan. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that, you know, having the cast sort of localizing the cast rather than trying to, you know, cast Asian people is something that really hurts the movie. I think that, you know, there's still plenty of options for that to be. I don't think they made enough changes that they're like, well, we're not trying to adapt Death Note. We're taking the idea of it. It's loosely based on a true story. In this case, though, the story is not true.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, it is true that they took it and they westernized it, they Americanized it, and I'm not trying to make any comments or anything, like, because I don't believe anything like that, but when most people think westernized, they think white.
Yeah.
I mean, you can edit that out later, maybe.
It's something worth talking about. And, maybe casting the leads as whites were a good idea because they're fucking sociopaths. And, like,
white people are fucking crazy.
Like, yeah, I'm not going to be saying, like, oh, all white people are bad or whatnot because, I mean, we're both white guys. But, like, if we're going to be casting diversity, you maybe don't want to make your, you know, villains the only minorities in the film.
True.
You know, if you're going to cast...
So they did... I feel like they did a good, at least a decent job casting.
Yeah, of the... I think of the, what? Five leads? I would say of the five leads...
Was probably the weakest actor.
Oh, yeah, we're talking about... I'm still saying, like, of the five leads, you know, you have... three people who are white and, you know,
two that are not.
Two people of color, and, you know, two of the three heroes are the people of color, as opposed to two of the two villains who are, you know, white. Well, no, six leads. Ryuk counts as a lead, but he's not exactly human.
We can't really...
Does that count as diversity casting?
You can't really hate what you don't know what it is.
So, I guess that's, you know, our thoughts on the... I don't know, maybe I'm speaking for you, but I think that, you know, the casting and the racial casting and the, you know, translation from a Japanese property to a Western film, I think that was fine. I think that it was problematic or anything, you know, was an issue with that, honestly.
I think it was pretty good. I think it was... I don't know, I don't want to be a dick. 5.5 out of 10 across the board. It was 6 out of 10.
On, you know, just everything about the film, you mean?
As far as the topics we've covered so far.
Yeah.
Yeah, the changes that they made and the condensation and the casting and the cinematography. And then what did you think about the music? I thought some of it was really good. Some of it went well. Like, there are some parts where I was like, I see what you're doing there. You're singing this song because you're doing that. That's punny. That's funny.
They got a little heavy-handed sometimes with the song selections.
Yeah, especially if you were listening with subtitles. It was really obvious.
Yeah, I think, well, we had to turn subtitles on because I think the vocal track was kind of quiet.
It was very quiet, yes.
So audio mixing, maybe not the best, but, you know, song selection, I guess I don't have a major problem with it, just because, like, if you're gonna, you know, criticize things about the film, there are things I would
go to before the music. Other than that. Like, sure.
I mean, the music selection was, you know, serviceable but cheesy, I would say, and that serves this film, I think.
I would say yes, it was, did not really detract from the movie. It is in no way, shape, or form memorable. They're not going to be selling Death Note 2017 Netflix edition soundtracks. At least I sincerely hope not. But, I mean, what else is there to talk about? There was the script, I mean, that freaking final climatic car chase where L crashes through the bus stop with the drive slow, drive safe sign and just completely demolishes the bus stop.
I think this movie was definitely intentionally campy and intentionally silly in a lot of ways. And there's no better indication of that than L, you know, driving through an advertisement that says drive slow, be safe.
Yep.
I mean, that's, you know, an intentional joke at the climax of the film
during a rather intense car chase. Yep.
It's a little tongue in cheek. A lot of lights delivery is it doesn't feel like he's, you know, the lead in a high stakes dramatic film at all. It feels like he's the straight man in a comedic movie.
Yeah, like I was saying earlier, I feel like Light was probably the weakest actor there. I don't know what would, like, just because, I mean, like you said, it felt like the stakes weren't real. He wasn't really feeling it. He was just kind of there. experiencing it. What do you think?
I mean, yeah, I think it's just like it's in service of the movie being just not that great and being kind of campy, because it's, you know, he doesn't need to be a good actor. It's almost better if he's not a good actor. And it's just what I keep coming back to. I loved this movie, but not because it was good. Quite the opposite. It's like, for me, it hits that perfect level of, like, bad movie where...
bad, good.
Yeah.
Fair enough. But it wasn't so bad it was good. It was just bad, but good.
Yeah. So, do you want to talk about the ending some, then? Is there anything that we need to talk about sort of before that?
I don't know if we should talk about something before that. Now that you have me on the topic of the ending, I like the fact that they kept Light's kind of devious side that was capable of betrayal while still working in the fact, like, I didn't want to kill you, but you took the book, you dumb bitch, and now you're gonna die. Like, yeah, it was kind of cool how, like, he still did all that. They kind of worked in the...
Oh, yeah, which, you know, speaking of which, like, to go back to, like, what I was talking about earlier, like, basically, it's... The reason that, like, Light and L, or not Light and L, Light and Mia feel so different than Light and Misa is basically, you know, like I said, Light's using Misa, whereas here, it's basically, like... Mia's sort of this chick who's a little crazy, maybe.
A little unhinged,
and it's like, you know, it's basically they get hot over murder. And
yeah.
It's almost like, it feels like the murders are more
murder
foreplay
porn
than anything else.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was definitely interesting. And then that scene in the Ferris wheel where they're like, you wrote my name in the book? Well, you wrote my name in the book!
Yeah, it's... It's like the gift of the Magi meets Romeo and Juliet, only dumber.
I keep going back to, it was good. It was enjoyable. Definitely not movie of the year.
No, I wouldn't call it one of my favorite films. I wouldn't go around recommending it to people. I wouldn't recommend going around watching it on your own. I'd say, you know, it's a good movie to...
Get a little bit drunk.
Group of people with and go in expecting it to be a bad movie and have an enjoyable night of it.
Expect it to be the absolute worst film you have ever seen in your entire life, and you will enjoy at least one aspect of this movie. I guarantee it.
Yeah. So, the ending, like, basically what happens is it becomes sort of this car chase. They run to... a Ferris wheel to kind of escape. I don't know how they thought they were going to escape riding to the top of a Ferris wheel.
Light
that's sort of the
figured
most
out.
Trapped that you... That's true.
Light had it all figured out beforehand. Yeah.
Well, the thing was, like, Mia was the one who texted him. He's like, meet me at the Ferris wheel, I think. Wasn't she?
No, he said Ferris wheel now.
Oh, okay. I was maybe remembering that.
Yeah, it was. She texted him telling her that the cops were coming for him, and he texted her back saying, meet me at the lighthouse, or the Ferris wheel.
Yeah, the lighthouse would be his home.
Very nice, sir.
Puns. I actually kind of think that the...
God damn
like,
it.
The ending was most where it fell apart, because that was where it... most started feeling like Death Note, but also like where it kind of most got away from it thematically.
It definitely did, and at the very end, did L turn into what he was chasing? Did he write Light Turner's name in the Death Note?
Like,
or
basically, to just briefly summarize, what happens is Light writes up, you know, one of his trademark convoluted plans.
Light is now Schrodinger's cat.
Yeah, like, he ends up writing Schrodinger's cat.
Light is now Schrodinger's cat. We can no longer prove if he is alive or dead.
Oh, yeah, I'm getting to that. Basically, like, what happens is he writes up, you know, one of his trademark convoluted plans from the manga, essentially. He, you know, he's like, okay, well, this is how, you know,
little bit things of are going to happen. Future telling, little bit of intellectual badass, and I think a lot of hope and guesswork.
Well, this should work, hopefully. you know, he basically writes a plan where essentially he's able to kill off Mia. He is able to control two people into saving him and keeping the Death Note out of his hands, putting suspicion off of him. And he's also able to sort of, he was able to, because Mia wrote his name in the Death Note because she's a clingy psychopath. Like, she's a yandere, essentially. And
I feel like I probably would have broken up with her at that point. Citing unhealthy relationship terms.
He did break up with her in some sense, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty final.
Yeah. no chance of salvaging that relationship. God, just the line, you know. You wrote my name down in the death. You wrote my name down, didn't you? Oh, you wrote my name down. First. I was pissed. You know. Yeah, you know, he basically gambits his way out of it. Essentially, like, his father, he's like, oh my god, it was you, which, you know, his father, very different from his father in the manga, in the anime, you know, very different, you know, characterization, whereas here he's, you know, more neutrally, you know, morally gray, whereas, you know, Light's father in the anime, in the manga, was
completely
very much
it.
You know, he's the only good character, really. But the thing that, like, he's basically like, how, you know, how'd you do it, you know? He's just, he doesn't seem like he's wanting to turn his son in. And, you know, you find L, or you see L, he manages to figure out sort of how the Death Note works. Like, he gets tipped off and essentially is like,
he puts two and two together.
This is how it works. And, you know, you see what happens is you get this ambiguous ending in two ways, where one, you see Light, or you see L, poring over this page of the Death Note that he finds. Not the full Death Note. Light manages to get that back into his possession. But L has this page of the Death Note, and he's about to write something down on it.
And he's staring at Light's picture the whole time, kind of laughing crazy.
Yeah, like, he's basically breaking down, and it's left ambiguous as to whether or not he does anything with it, you know. And then you get, you know, Light telling his father, it's like, you know, it's, I thought that this was going to be more black and white than it was, but it's like you said, sometimes you just have to choose the lesser of two evils. And his father looks at him and he's like, well, which one are you? And then you just hear Ryuk laughing, and Light sort of looks over at him, and that's where the movie ends.
And then Ryuk does get his final line in, and he says, you humans are so interesting. And then it cuts.
And, like, that's just compared to the manga's ending. Like, the thing that I think makes the manga really strong was that it sort of plays on these ideas of morality and, you know, good and evil and whatnot. But at the end, it delivers, like, a pretty bold message. At the end, it delivers, L is in the wrong. What L is doing is wrong. And sometimes, like,
Light.
No, yeah, what Light is doing is wrong.
Okay.
And it doesn't, like, completely condone, you know, Near or L either. And especially in the manga, like, it's implied that Near himself used the Death Note to set things up, which is missing from the anime. But in the manga, like, it's heavily implied that Near himself used the Death Note in order to catch Light, ultimately.
Mm, interesting.
But, like, in, you know, in the anime and the manga, Light dies broken and alone, and what he's been doing is wrong. Well, with this Light, you know, he's not pure evil, and it's left up in the air a bit more, and, like, I think in some ways it's kind of irresponsible to leave that open, but it's more in line with
how
Western.
How dare you!
It's kind of more in line with Western sensibilities and cultures. Like, we like our stuff really, you know, ambiguous.
Right?
And
yeah,
now, like, especially with what's popular now, you know, you've got, you know, Breaking Bad was big. Like,
yep.
It's ended now, but Breaking Bad was huge. Dexter was huge. You know, you've got Game of Thrones is still huge, where all the characters are scumbags. you know.
Hey, man, don't talk bad about my...
I mean, you know, one of the most sympathetic characters in Game of Thrones right now. I'm going off the books rather than the show, because I haven't watched the show past where it diverges from the books, really. But
I have read,
you know, Jaime Lannister is, you know, you first meet him engaging in incest, and now he's one of the more sympathetic characters in the series.
Hey, man, don't knock until you tried it.
Oh, boy. You don't watch a ton of anime? There is plenty of that shit out there. let's talk about that another day. But yeah, it's, you know, in Western sensibility, we like, you know, the Byronic hero a little more. The guy who's
that
kind
means
of a
he
dick.
Goes both ways.
He's... That's not what it means. I think I'm using the term Byronic hero right here. You know, it's a character who, you know, is kind of a dick. He's more ambiguous, morally ambiguous. He's more gray than black and white, and that's what we like now. And you know, the live action movie sort of reflected that. So I don't know. Overall, I had a good time with
it. I did too.
Like, I'm gonna say again, I don't think it was a good movie, but it was a movie that I had a good time with. You know, I had a couple drinks, I had some good company in my good buddy here.
Oh yeah.
And if you're watching it under the same circumstances going in, expecting, okay, this isn't going to be a good movie, it's not going to be as good as Death Note, I think that you'll maybe enjoy it as well.
Yeah. Give it a chance.
Give it a chance. Anything else you want to add?
I do want to give a shout out to that one guy who beat a law enforcement officer over the head just on the off chance that the dude he was chasing was actually Kira. Like, that was awesome. Like, talk about freaking Deus Ex Machina. Like, that guy.
Kira of the machine. All right. Let's wrap this up then. I have been Buggy.
And I have been Jonathan for a very long time.
And this has been, I guess, sort of our review of Death Note that isn't actually in any specific one of my podcasts that I run. So,
two friends watch Desu Noto.
Why did you say that in a slightly Russian accent?
Because I'm terrible with accents.
Oh, I love the Desu Noto.
I love this doctor.
Fetch me more vodka. I will write in more names. I think we're done here.
Give me fuck potato chip. I'm drink potato drink.
It is funny because vodka is made from the meat of the potato. Does potato have meat? I'm not sure. I'm too drunk to be knowing for certain. All right. That's been it. Good night.
That has
everyone.
Been us. Good night.